roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes, reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to talk to you about this past weekend's results. Of course, we got UFC 263 to talk about, two title fights on Saturday, an epic feature bout as well. Got Bellator from Friday night. They had a title fight as well. Thursday night, PFL. Last time we were with you, we were looking forward to Thursday night. Well, those fights took place as well. So we'll definitely cover a little bit of that as well, featherweights and lightweight, some of them already securing their playoff spots. And, of course, the latest news, dramas, everything you can think about, plus two guests. Two. We have at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time, Brendan Loughnane, who was one of the fighters who got a win this past Thursday, securing his way to the playoffs over at PFL. And then at 9:45 a.m. Pacific, 12:45 p.m. Eastern, we'll talk to Bilal Muhammad, who got a win at UFC 263. So buckle up. We're with you for the next hour. It is MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, June 14th. So goes. Let's get to it, man. UFC 263's main event was historic in the sense that Israel Adesanya is now climbing his way, you know, up the legendary status in the middle of the division. Got a ways to go, I believe, until he catches Anderson Silva. And I'm sure he would even admit that. But, man, he's looked pretty fabulous. He's never really lost as a middleweight. His only loss was the last fight. The one against Jan Blachowicz when he tried to become a champ. Nothing wrong with going for history. But as the middleweight, he keeps writing his book. And this is his third title defense. He defeated Marvin Vettori for the second time. First time in a title fight. And looked pretty dominant.
I think I agree. I think he's on his way. He's not there yet. But I think he's on his way. And I think when we go back and look at his road versus Anderson's, I think we're going to be more impressed by his road and what he's had to go through, because he's had to go through some really, really tough competitors.
Yeah, he has. I mean, right as of this moment, he has a better overall record. And not just because I think Anderson, you know, before he had his decline, I think he made it up to 36 and 4. So even at this point, Israel just has a little bit of a better win percentage. Anderson Silva was like, 16-4, 18-4, something like that, before he came over to the UFC. He was pretty highly thought of. We knew he was a great striker. And then in the UFC, he just became a beast, man. I mean, many call him the greatest still. But he did have four losses early on, four losses that made him tougher, you know, and made him future world champion, future Hall of Famer, everything. Israel Adesanya has only had the one loss, you know, again, moving up in his weight class. And, you know, he bounces back with a nice win over Marvin Vettori, a guy who had claimed to win the first fight because he lost to Israel Adesanya via a split decision. Well, this time there was, you know, they didn't really need to read the judges' scorecards. We all knew. Although I think Marvin was still confused at that time, according to Izzy. He thought maybe he had won, but he hadn't. He did get the fight to where he wanted, which was on the ground. And, you know, Israel definitely showed some composure, some tactics there. Didn't get dominated like he did against Jan Blachowicz, so that was a good thing for him. Marvin made it interesting by going for a submission as well during the fight. I wouldn't say it was like, oh, my God, the deepest, rear naked or, you know, anything, you know, most troublesome, I guess. But he was there. He was there with hooks in. You know, he had the positioning, and he was starting to go for it. But Israel Adesanya dug himself out of that. So Marvin can always look back and go, wow, you know, I was this close. Because maybe with some proper techniques and if he just kept at it, you know, because Israel wound up getting the top position. But, you know, maybe he could have worked off that. There's no shame, honestly, in losing in a title fight. It sucks because the road back for him is going to be tough. But he went out there, and I thought he performed pretty admirably considering just how great Israel is.
Yeah, if you're Marvin Vettori, I mean, you can't really sit back. You're going to sit back. You're going to watch the fight. And I think what has to happen at the end of the day is he just has to realize that Israel Adesanya was just better than him that night. You know, there's a couple things you could look at and say, okay, maybe I could have done this, maybe I could have done that. But really, overall, he just had his number that night. So if you're Marvin Vettori, you got to get back on that horse. But we don't know what that horse is really going to look like, because now he's a guy who has that's in a perfect world, right? But the deal is, when you look at the situation, you have a guy who's lost twice to the champion. The UFC is probably not going to be too inclined in giving him those type of matchups. They don't want him to pick off other guys that could potentially fight Israel Adesanya when you have a dominant champ like that. And for Marvin Vettori to even get a whiff of a third fight, he would have to do some just tremendous, amazing things to get back there, because other than that back take and that rear naked choke, there weren't too many moments for the guy in that fight. I picked him to win the fight. But he just didn't have them. You know, he was going after the head a lot, and he just wasn't coming close. Israel Adesanya kind of knew what was going on. So there are adjustments that he could make, but he's just going to have to look tremendous to even get a whiff of a third fight.
Yeah, he was headhunting too much, in my opinion. There wasn't enough of a blend of different strikes. It looked like Israel Adesanya was out there, and he was comfortable. It allowed him to, you know, clown around a little bit. I think Israel was definitely making sure, okay, stay tight on your takedown defense. Don't get foolish. Don't let somebody steal rounds or anything like that. Maybe a little too conservative for me once he got to about the fourth or fifth round, when he proved that Vettori's, you know, path to victory wasn't going to be easy, even if it got to the ground. I thought Israel was competing very well. I thought Israel maybe in rounds four or five could have picked off Marvin Vettori. But it's also a testament to Vettori. And, I mean, you look at his back, his shoulders, and then he's got this big old neck. You probably have to put it on him pretty good, man. He looks like he's just pretty solid. And you know, if you're going to KO him, you got to really, really commit and go for it. Israel Adesanya was comfortable just being dominant. And I think at one point, he said, I want to beat you every round. And that's when I kind of knew, when I was thinking about that, that my over 4.5 rounds wasn't going to hit, which was the third leg of a parlay that I had. So I really, really wanted to finish. It didn't matter who, honestly. But I could tell, obviously, rounds two and three, if anybody was going to finish here, it was going to be Israel Adesanya. I didn't get it, so I was a little bit bitter in that regard. But, you know, what are you going to do? The little rivalry's over. I think there's a little bit of respect going back and forth, and that's that. Three title defenses for Israel Adesanya. Congrats to him. He's our number three pound-for-pound ranked fighter in USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie. John Jones still number one. Kamaru Usman number two. I would imagine John Jones has to start figuring something out, or he's going to obviously drop, because we're pushing about a year and a half since his last fight, with no sign of a fight. There's nothing on the books. He's not even regarded as the, you know, he's being in the pole position for the title fight. It's Derek Lewis at this point. So we'll see. But we still got a ways to go before we worry about that. John Jones has done a lot, but Kamaru Usman's hot on his trail. Israel Adesanya hot on his trail as well.
Would you not agree, though, that Marvin Vettori is a solid grappler? In my opinion, he's a solid grappler. And he had Israel in positions where Israel was able to not only reverse, also pull out, get up, land some ground and pound. So to me, it's very impressive what Israel Adesanya has done from his last fight. Now, granted, you can always point at Blachowicz is just a bigger dude, and I get that. But I feel like Israel Adesanya improved the areas that some people would say Jan Blachowicz exposed. So I want to give that guy crazy props, because fighters at that level don't always do that. They just rely on being great. And when you're Israel Adesanya and you have the skills that he has, I could see you relying on just being great, but he didn't do that. You could tell he worked on himself and made himself better. That's a scary thing.
Here's another thing I think I've come to realize too, in paying attention to the embeddeds. I think Israel Adesanya was just more tired in the Blachowicz fight. I don't think his cardio was as good in the Blachowicz fight. So was it just a matter of he probably worked on his techniques, the 20 pounds lighter that Marvin Vettori was? I think he was also less exhausted. He just seemed a little bit more explosive in certain situations. But, yeah, I mean, Izzy made the adjustments. He made sure he didn't get dominated and lose rounds. And that was that, you know. Though he wasn't able to get some sort of a finish, he was dominant enough. We know he's better than Marvin Vettori. And then we're all just going to move on. Bobby Knuckles has to be next. I can't think of somebody else. I did want to say something in regards to what you said with Vettori and Costa. That could be one way to look at it. They don't want Vettori to pick people off. But I remember Joseph Benavidez was kind of in a spot like that, and he was picking people off. He could get the third title shot at Demetrius Johnson. Eventually, when Demetrius Johnson was no longer there, he was able to get another title shot, a couple of them actually. But I think the UFC is very creative when there's fighters they also aren't jiving with. And right now, I don't think they're jiving much with Paulo Costa. Maybe Vettori might do them a favor. You know, might, who knows if he's in a certain contract situation. But for now, at least we can say Israel versus Whitaker, probably sometime in the fall. Agreed?
You know what? When people speak up, sometimes they get put in the doghouse. But I feel like in this particular issue that Paulo Costa spoke up on, quite a few people co-signed, you know? And I think it might have gotten to the point where I don't know that the UFC is going to make people pay for that. Right, because you have to come up to your heavyweight champion. He was one of the most vocal, right? He had a very strong tweet that night.
He was a little bit more tactful, though. You know, what do I have to do? I think he said, Paulo Costa was like, I didn't even sign. Why are they promoting it? You know, and then questioning the pay, and then he's only fought like 3 times in the last 36 months, which, you know, 3 years, obviously. So he hasn't been very active. He's pulled out some fights. And then, you know, you could just tell it was because Dana White said, hey, pal, you should have started a YouTube channel when you were 13. And by the way, you're the last guy in a position, you know, and he referenced his last performance. So, okay, it's not like he's his bitter enemy, but I think Dana White, you know, probably just – and I'm not suggesting that that's what he's trying to do. I'm just saying I don't think they'll think too much of, you know, if Vettori wins, that could hurt Costa's chances or anything. I think if two guys want to fight each other, they run it because they have time. They got Whitaker and Izzy. Let's say Whitaker wins. That buys them even more time because they would have to do a trilogy. And so that allows the Gastelums, Hermansons, Brunsons. Brunson, I think, by the way, is on a quiet 4-fight win streak too. But it allows all them to kind of get back to where they were. Yeah, and in fact, I should say that because if Marvin Vettori got a rematch in a 5-fight win streak, then I don't see why Brunson would get one in a 4-fight. Granted, he didn't take him to a split decision. He lost, you know, via a finish, but whatever. Anyway, let's get to Brandon Moreno. Brandon Moreno is the new UFC flyweight champion. He defeated Davison Figueiredo. He choked him out. It was a great fight. I was on the edge of my seat. In fact, I thought it was more exciting than the main event. I knew the main event had a lot to live up to, you know, but the crowd went nuts. There's a lot of Mexican Americans, a lot of Mexican flags. It's the first Mexican born champion for the UFC. Tremendous. I think it's going to be tremendous for Brandon Moreno, for Mexican MMA, and for the UFC. But what a performance by the assassin, baby.
You know what? I wish he would change that nickname. I really do. What I found amazing about that fight was very similar to my take on Israel Adesanya. I think if you look at it, a lot of us might say that Davidson Figueiredo didn't look the same as the last one. You alluded to his weight cut and just how much that might have taken out of him. But at the same time, I don't want to take away from Brandon Moreno, because Brandon Moreno looked like he made a lot of adjustments and he was just ultra aggressive. I thought he had a great game plan. I thought he established a beautiful jab early on. He did a lot of things in that fight that, to me, I'm going to say I was probably wrong, because early on I thought, man, I wish he would maybe get one in between here, not just an immediate rematch, because I felt like he did need some areas to improve based on that first fight. But he shored them up, and he looked great. And did you get to see the video of his home gym and them watching the fight, how they went bananas?
They definitely went bonkers for him. Those are great videos. I love seeing when fighters come home, you know, to an airport, a city. You know, Charlie Olives had one of those receptions. Francis Ngannou had one of those receptions. I love seeing those reaction videos. Great stuff there. You're right. The more you say it, the more you feel like you're taking away from Moreno, because it's quite possible that even the best Figueiredo could not have beaten the best Moreno, because Moreno went after it, man. He went after winning the world title like I haven't seen in a long time. He was ultra aggressive. He put a pace on and he attacked with his fists. He kicked. He wrestled. He grappled. You know, he was going for back takes. He just put a lot of pressure on Figueiredo. There's no way around it. That's what Embedded does. Kind of shows us behind the scenes of what's happening. And I did observe that Figueiredo made weight and gingerly walked off the scale. Now, I've seen other champions do that and still come out and defend. But he had a rough weight cut. But it could be that the weight cut may have just been rough and he just also didn't address his cardio or didn't work hard or whatever. That's on him. You know, the other guy had a goal and he went after it, you know, and he was very confident even after his loss. We caught up to him in December after his loss, and then we caught up to him a few months ago, you know, when there was still time, you know, about a month for his fight. Ultra confident, like he knew something we didn't. You know, he had obviously taken Figueiredo's best shots. I think he felt, I can take those. I've gotten a lot better. And so he deserved it. You know, he went out there and performed and was just outstanding, man. And you know what? How about a shout out to the flyweights, both Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno? This was a division that was, I don't want to say dead, but they were looking to eliminate it, you know. And so it was in a coma. I don't know, on a ventilator. I don't want to sound disrespectful to anybody that has somebody in that situation, but you know what I mean? A lot of the flyweights weren't getting re-signed. Some were moving to bantamweight. Some were in limbo. One got traded, you know? And now look at how exciting that division has been in the last, you know, in the last 18 months or so. Good for the flyweights.
Yeah, and that's definitely been a lot of fun. And I'm trying to think, like, what Brandon Moreno's next move could be on that would make the most sense for him, but at the same time would make sense for the UFC. And there's so many factors that play into all of that when you think about it, you know. Like right now, you see the rest of the world, you have a Mexican-born champion. God, don't you have to have his first title defense in Mexico? I mean, wouldn't that be awesome, the reception that he would get? But the rest of the world isn't in the same situation that we are here in the United States, where I mentioned this on another show, our Vegas is practically back to normal. You walk into a casino. Yesterday I walked into the supermarket, maybe 10% of the people had masks on. Like it's back to normal. That's not the case. You know, you look at Brazil, they're hosting Copa America, but I didn't see any fans in the stand or anything like that. And
there's not many, but I see them in the, unless my vision's that bad and it's just cutouts, but it looked to me like there's some fans.
Aren't you watching Euro though?
Oh, duh. Yeah, you're right. I'm watching Euro.
So, I think I saw a Mexican game too, and it didn't seem like there were very many, that there were people in the games as well. So
you got a lot of deaths.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is, you go to San Diego, you go to L.A., you go to Anaheim. There's big crowds in there. Look what they did for Alaska's, you know.
Or you know what goes, even just Las Vegas. Do you remember? I'm not trying to put them on the level of Julio Cesar Chavez, of course, But when Julio Cesar Chavez did fight in Las Vegas, the Mexican fans, they travel. You know, they love their combat sports athletes. I don't know that it happens overnight where, you know, you got a lot of people that are just in love with a kid that just won a title. But I think it's going to resonate. I think it's going to be tremendous. Mexico has gotten hit hard with cases and deaths. And, yes, I don't see a sporting event there anytime soon. Brazil's pulling off an event called Copa America. It's a soccer tournament. But like Gil stated, there's just no fans in the audience. So we'll see. You know, this is our neighbor to the north. I know that the United States will do their best to assist their neighbors, especially Canada and Mexico. It all boils down to vaccines. But, yeah, they can probably do something in the bordering states of Texas, maybe back in Arizona. Of course, California is supposed to open up tomorrow, I believe. And then there's just good old Las Vegas, too. Now, Brandon Moreno is on a card that features another big superstar, and it's like a nice 1-2 punch. Then you might get fans that actually want to travel. But way ahead of ourselves, I don't know if it'll be Figueiredo. He says, give me 4 months, and let's run a trilogy fight. So at this point, it's 1-0-1 for Brandon Moreno. They have a draw, and he has a win, but it's not like it's 1-1 either. But I think Figueiredo may have to take a fight before Moreno has to fight him again. We'll see. Sometimes the UFC surprises me, and they go with the hot hand, and then there's other times where they're like, no, we're going to let it marinate. We have other plans.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Featured Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz. Leon Edwards was pretty dominant at times, you know? I mean, Nate Diaz was doing some awkward stuff in there. He turned into Nick Diaz, where he was, you know, turning his back and posing, and that's what Nick was doing to Anderson Silva. He did everything but lay down on the ground, you know? I don't know what he was doing. I don't know if he was just trying to throw him off his game, entertain the fans. I'm old and dumb now. I do silly things in the octagon. I don't know, you know. Then when they got to fighting, it was a pretty fun fight. Now, Leon Edwards was kind of having his way. He opened up Nate, you know, with some elbows, some punches. And but I kept saying, you know, if Nate just throws hands and pressures, goes at Leon Edwards, I feel like he can get somewhere, you know. When he was giving Edwards enough space so that Edwards could kick and punch and elbow, I thought he was in more trouble. So it just seemed like he just needed to take it a little bit more serious. And sure enough, when he did, we had a situation in the fifth round with a minute left where he popped Leon Edwards and hurt Leon Edwards. I mean, it wasn't just fatigue, folks. If you looked at Leon Edwards' eyes, he was out for a moment there on his, you know, while he was standing, but he was able to regain, you know, his marbles and finish the fight. But man, Nate made it exciting at the very end. And, you know, because I've seen this fight a few times now, it's the one time that Justin Bieber really, really came out of his seat.
Was he in the first row, or did we ever clarify that?
I think he's technically the first row after all, as a fan. But I'm saying I've seen Dana White bring the celebrities like right next to him, you know, which right on the apron. Maybe it's not a ticket that's labeled as front row or whatever. You're just kind of like in a special seat. Either you're a commission official, an announcer, or, you know, just part of the UFC exec team or whatever. You know, you see Lorenzo, Mark Ratner, Megan Olivi, the announcers, the matchmakers. But I thought Beavs, he would have had one of those, but he didn't. You know, I guess he was technically going to be in the first row after all. It kind of looked like the second row. As rich as he is in his social media, I think I would have brought him a little closer, but whatever.
You know, for the longest time, whenever I want to make a point, I tend to say the Diaz brothers. And we are so far removed from Nick Diaz. I mean, granted, he could come back. You know, it seems like it's coming that way. And I don't want to take away from Nate Diaz. So I think going forward, I'm just going to say Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz brings it. He's worth every penny. And you're right, the crowd, like, man, that was a rough crowd. They were booing just about everything. But that one fight, boy, did they just go bananas. Not just there in the arena, but social media was kicking. This guy just has it. You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like Stone Cold Steve Austin, where if he wanted to be a heel, he'd be a great heel. And if he wanted to be a babyface, he could be a great babyface. But Nate, the advantage that he has is he just comes in and kind of does his own thing, you know, and it works. I think if he didn't get a little bit of a flurry, but, you know, if he didn't put Leon Edwards in trouble at the end, things might be a little different. We might be talking about different things right now, but the fact that he threatened on a very, very good fighter like Leon Edwards, boy, that just keeps the myth going. You know, it makes you want to see him again. It just depends on who that dance partner is, you know, who else is going to be there. It's got to be a fun fight. But one of the things that Nate Diaz seems to like is make a paycheck and then kind of go away. And I don't know if it's spending that paycheck or what, but he just doesn't strike me as a guy that says, who are you going to give me next? I'm ready to go. You know, like, I think he's going to take that money and he's going to hang out for a while. And who knows, by the time he comes back, the landscape will look different again.
He said he wants to fight. And I thought he said 4 months he'll fight somebody. He also mentioned that he had an injury and he wasn't as motivated during camp, which that's your bad, you know. Leon mm-hmm. was motivated. But I could tell that his competitive juices were saying, man, you know what? If I train, I can still compete and beat some of these guys. And so book me fast, you know, before I go out there and, like you said, spend money or just pull away from the sport. I think he hopefully recognized it, you know. Does he got enough for Usman? I don't think so. Does anybody? I don't think so at this point. Maybe Covington. Covington's won rounds for him. We'll see. I think Covington will get a shot. Leon Edwards definitely could probably benefit from one more fight, I think. But he got some good experience here, you know, going 5 rounds with Nate Diaz and getting some more rust off that body. You know, the Bilal Muhammad fight was the only other fight that he had in the last 18 months. So, you know, we'll see. But it was a fun fight. I hope they both fight. I think 4 months sounds about right, but I think they both should take different opponents. Nate Diaz obviously has that big, big card he can play, which is the Conor McGregor Part 3. So I think what he'll do is hang back and just watch Poirier and McGregor, because if McGregor wins, he's fighting Charlie Olive for the title. And Diaz will just have to pick another dance partner, maybe run it back with Masvidal. Some people are suggesting Tony Ferguson. Damian Maia put out a statement today on Instagram that said, hey, I think you mentioned my name. Respectfully, I would love to have my last fight with you. So who knows? All right, folks, let's get to our first guest. We're going to set him up. His name is Brendan Loughnane. He got a win this past Thursday at PFL 2021 Week 4. Puts him in a position where he can advance to the playoffs. He handled his own business. Didn't have to rely on anybody else to secure his spot. So kudos to him. We're going to talk to him here. Be right back with Brendan Loughnane. What's up, Brendan? How are you? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio. Congrats on your win this past Thursday night.
Thank you, guys. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. What you munching on there? Some grapes?
Skinny popcorn.
Oh, nice.
All right. I love that you went out there and handled your own business. You didn't have to rely on anyone else or anything like that. It's been a great season for you so far. I know we're only your weight class and the lightweights are the only ones that have fought twice, but I was going to say you're probably the outstanding fighter of PFL so far.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. I mean, yeah, it's the second one was a bit tougher than the first one, but got the job done in the end, and I'm happy with the performance overall.
The first one was a statement win, and it put you in a position where you could maybe fight differently than others, you know, wiped out like that sense of urgency that some of these guys need, meaning I need to get a finish in the first round, but it allowed you to also have one hell of an exciting fight in the second one. I mean, Tyler Diamond would not go away. You put it on him, and that guy kept coming back. I mean, there may have even been times, arguably, the ref could have stopped it, but I'll tell you this much, as a fan, man, that fight was something else.
Yeah, I don't know. Keith Peterson was a bit slow, I think, at times. there was times when he was going in and out of consciousness. His eyes were rolling and stuff, and I was like looking at the ref like, wow, are you really going to let this go? It almost felt like back in Roman times and Julius Caesar was just going. but yeah, it was a fun fight. We gave the fans what they wanted now.
So you wouldn't have been shocked if somebody would have yelled, release the Lions.
Right. I was just like, I'm throwing everything but the kitchen sink here. Like, what else do I have to do here to stop this fight?
Yeah, I could agree with that. The kid kept coming back, man. He's a zombie. He kept coming back into consciousness. And you both have some incredible cardio. I would be lucky if I was in a fight like that to last maybe 30 seconds. I don't know how you guys can do it for 15.
Yeah, it was a very, very high-paced fight. But I get to show a bit of diversity. I get to show great striking with Shaman. And then in this fight, I got to use my wrestling a bit more. Yet again, people start talking about D1 wrestlers and this and that. And again, I got to show my caliber of wrestling. I got to take him down twice. So, I mean, yeah, it was nice to show my well-rounded skills.
You've probably done the math by now. You're safe. Chris Wade is safe. I think Bubba Jenkins will be safe too. Basically, Shaman has a position where Movlid and Palmer are fighting. And if Palmer can get a first round stoppage, he'll advance. But if Movlid can just win, he'll advance. And Shaman will be out. I mean, credit to Shaman who put himself in a position to at least, you know, I guess get this far.
Yeah, if Lance Palmer wins on points, like he usually does, then I'll fight Shaman. But if Movlid gets the job done early or wins in general, I'll be fighting him. And yeah, like you say, if Palmer gets the first round or second half of the first round finish, then I'll fight him. So, like, it's just so bizarre. There's so many outcomes of this fight. It could be one of three people, so let's see what happens.
Do you like it? It's officially 1-4, right?
Yeah.
Do you like that? I for some reason, like, I think one, I'm not saying I think a bye would be too much, but I think some sort of a benefit, like one can choose his opponent. Man, that would be nice to me.
They said they might be doing that next year, so I think that would be really fun, don't you?
I do, and I'll tell you why, because a lot of fighters, most fighters that I talk to, don't like to run it back with somebody else. You know, last year, I think Palmer fought his opponent three times. It just worked out between injuries and seedings or whatever. So I like that flexibility. But there may also be a fighter that goes, wait a minute, I got that guy's number. Let's run it back. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, let's see what happens with this next fight. I'll be tuning in on the 25th anyway, and I'll be very keen to see who goes through.
Yeah, definitely. Well, health-wise, you're feeling good after these two fights and especially that last war?
Oh, yeah. It's going to take another couple of days of rest, but yeah, I'll be good.
Brendan, I saw you kind of linked up with Tyler after the fight. Did you have a chance to talk to him? And what did you guys share about that big fight?
That guy's, I don't know, I learned a lot after speaking to Tyler Diamond because I've had a lot of fights now, but the way that I was hitting him and the way that he kept coming back, I've never seen that type of resilience in a human. So when I talked to him and he was telling me that, just like how bad that he wanted to win, I've never seen anybody with that kind of resolve to win a fight. Most people would have took the easy way out many a times, but he didn't. And he went in that with one hell of an injury as well into that fight and just managed to keep going. I don't know. It was a crazy, crazy fight, and it was crazy to see someone with that much resolve.
Brendan, I think you would make a fabulous bank robber. Let me explain. Anytime I go to contact you, I have to be very cognizant of where you're going to be, because sometimes you could be in Dubai, you could be in the UK, you could be in San Diego, which is really close to where we're at. But we talked a little bit about our recipe with PFL and trying to figure out what's going to work best. Do you feel like you're in that spot now where you got this kind of figured out with the quarantines and training partners and training situations? Do you have that correct recipe now, or are you still somewhat searching for that?
Oh, yeah. I've been everywhere, done everything. Every gym you can name, I've pretty much trained there. So I just like to go around. I like to get new looks. I like to get different training partners. And I've always been that way. And I always fly out my same coach that I've had from day one. So got a nice little recipe. And so far, so good.
You know, when we first started covering you, we would tell our friends, watch this guy. Right? It was a little bit of a secret that we felt like we had. Now the world kind of knows who you are, what you're capable of doing. What situation did you prefer? Which one did you like better? Kind of going under the radar a little bit? Or do you like the fact that now when people cross you, they know they're in for a hell of a fight?
Well, it's funny you say that, because me and Bubba were having big back and forth backstage. And he was like, yeah, we're just talking mad trash to each other. And I was saying, listen, the truth is, when your name comes across the desk, people go, oh, I'm in for a cuddling match. I'm going to get a nice cuddle for 15 minutes. And then, you know, I'm going to be fine. Like, when my name comes across, there's going to be extreme violence. And that's the difference, Bubba. Like, no one is not scared of fighting you, but people are scared of fighting me. So I just think, yeah, I mean, it was a secret for a while, but now people know. Not only can I come out the gate fast and knock you out, I can also go to 15 minutes. I can wrestle you. Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I'm a well-rounded mixed martial artist now, and it gives me a good chance in this tournament.
What did Bubba say to that?
Well, can he say it's the truth?
Did he laugh it off, or did he have a good comeback?
Nah, me and him were going back and forth for about a good hour. But yeah, it's fun. And me and him are good for the organization, because we actually open our mouths and talk. So, you know, hopefully me and him make the final. It'll be a good fight.
You know, to me, man, that night had a lot of buzz for PFL. And of course, they've now been, not on your night in particular, but they've been on ESPN proper. I think a lot of people know who you are, man. And I think ESPN and PFL have to be pretty happy with this signing. You may be one of their best free agent signings ever.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. I mean, we actually seen it, didn't we? We seen Dana say, if I'm wrong, somebody gonna sign him. And PFL were like, okay. And then, and then they were like, okay. And then I just... I'm a good company fighter. I'm a good company man. If you look after me and you treat me well, I'll fight like the way I fight, and PFL do that. So everyone's a winner.
I know you're a Red Devils fan. Are you also a fan of the Three Lions? They won 1-0 yesterday.
This is what I'm saying. We're going to win the Euros this year, 100%. We're going to win it. We've got such
as long as it doesn't go to penalties, I think you might be right.
Yeah, exactly. But we've got such a good young squad this year.
How does Jadon Sancho not crack the not just the lineup, but the bench either?
I know, exactly. That just shows the caliber we have now.
Yeah. How much time before you get in there? You know, you're resting, well deserved, healing. When does the training start for the next round of fights?
Well, last time I was back in the gym Monday morning, and it was too soon. My body needs complete rest. I'm actually in Las Vegas. I'm actually in the same place that I seen you guys last time in the Mandalay Bay. That's what I'm saying. So I'm in there. I'm chilling. I'm going to do another few days of rest and then start the camp for the next one.
All right. Well, listen, great fight, man. Seriously, that was one of the – there was three events this weekend. PFL, Bellator, UFC. Your fight was right up there. Along with Marino and Figueredo is my favorites from this weekend. You guys went back and forth. It was really something else. You guys both dug deep, but of course, you just kind of had, you know, you were obviously the main driver of that fight. You were in control. Diamond was just really, really tough and gutsy, but he wouldn't go away. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that barn burner, man, on Thursday night. Heal up, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Brendan Loughnane, PFL featherweight, who had an awesome fight against Tyler Diamond. Check it out, folks, if you haven't seen it. It went back and forth, and Diamond just wouldn't go away. Diamond was on The Ultimate Fighter, I remember. Loughnane was on Dana White Contender Series. If his name is familiar, he's the one that a few seasons ago should have made it that night, and Dana White didn't ask him to come on for that week, and there was a big uproar. I think it had to do with the takedown at the end, right, Goz?
Yeah, he went for a takedown at the end.
That's why he mentioned that. And, you know, Dana White says, I like to see people go for it or whatever. Yeah, that's fine, man. We get it. That's kind of like your overall, you know, Bible. If it says UFC, what we're all about, yeah, as real as it gets, go for the finish. Don't leave it in the hands of the judges. But there still has to be at some point where you go, you know, hold on a minute. This guy's like 18-3. Tough fighter from, you know, Great Britain. And it's always good to have certain fighters that carry themselves well, speak well, can represent the company well, and they're exciting. You know, you look at all that, I think there's times where you just kind of put your ego in check and say, all right, you know, I didn't like that he did that, but we're going to sign him. Those, I would have even signed him the next day, even after the uproar, but that's where Dana White's pride sometimes gets the best of him. And he just likes to go against the grain, you know. But I think he's got to be regretting it because this guy's solid. I'm telling you, you can see right there. He was just so cool and chill, eating his chips, talking about the fight, you know. But like I say, very, very well spoken and a very, very exciting fighting. Now he's up to 21-3.
Did it bother you that he was eating one popcorn at a time?
No,
I don't think I could do that.
Where did you run into him? Where could you? Was he just in his room? What was like? It looked like there was a cabinet in the way of his head. You know what it looked like? It looked like he was, if he were to say, oh, well, my uncle's got a cabin. I'm in Tennessee. I'm in the back room. And it just looked like he was like in a dark little.
That was his lamp.
That was his lamp? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that one stings. He's at Mandalay Bay. Hell, we could have caught him on guard.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, every time you contact him, you never know where he's going to be.
He could be a spy. Oh, you're right. All right. Good booking there, Goz. Just to finish out the talk on PFL, we got those three guys that I mentioned that have advanced, or I'm pretty sure will advance. I don't think there's any way Bubba Jenkins doesn't advance. In fact, it clearly says right here, the Y says has advanced. Chris Wade and Brendan Loughnane and Shaman Marais with 5 points has to wait out the fight, Lance Palmer and Movlid Kabulayev fight in the featherweight division. In the lightweight division, which also was on display on Thursday night, Clay Collard and Loic Radziboff have advanced 9 and 6 points respectively. We got Roush Manfio and Alexander Martinez waiting out to see the results of let me see. I think there's the Anthony Pettis fight. And the way they have them listed here, it looks like Schulte, Held, and Aliyev are still in play. So it's a little confusing there towards the bottom. But basically, I know Anthony Pettis is a fighter that needs to go out there and at least get a win and a stoppage. Even if it's just in the third round, it'll get him 4 points and it should get him into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, I mean, what a lot of people want to see. It's why PFL signed him in the first place. So hopefully we'll see how it works out for him.
And by the way, when I say Brendan Loughnane is arguably one of their best free agent signings ever, I'm well aware that they've signed Rory McDonald, who's looked good, Anthony Pettis, Fabricio Werdum. But, you know, Rory still needs one more fight. We'll see how he goes. And, you know, Anthony Pettis and Fabricio Werdum, you know, their first fights didn't go their way. Fabricio got a no contest out of a fight that I thought he just honestly lost. But, you know, okay. They said there was a tap in there somewhere, and that's that. But now he's injured, and I don't know that he'll factor in the rest of the season. Anthony Pettis still has a shot by fighting this Rosh Manfield guy. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But if Anthony beats him, then it could be Anthony and Manfield, depending on the tiebreakers. Because Manfield, Martinez, Schulte, Hell, they all have 3 points. Aliyev. So there's probably got to be another round once all these fighters are 1-1 if they're all sitting at 3. I'm sure head-to-head would be something. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
That fight is not this week. It's the following week. So just so you know, Anthony Pettis fights on week 6. Bellator will sneak this in real quick as we wait for Bilal Muhammad. Yaroslav Amosov defeated Douglas Lima. He's now their new welterweight champion. Any thoughts on that fight? I mean, it was pretty dominant, rinse and repeat every round.
Yeah, that was a fight that Douglas Lima really needed to kind of not just let the Bellator crowd know who he is and where he's at, but just the world. He's had a strange career, you know, because I feel like he could battle with just about anyone. But there are times where fighters come along and do this to him. In this case, man, I don't know. That we've heard such good stuff about the wrestling over there at American Top Team. I mean, it didn't leave you saying, hey, when's that immediate rematch or anything like that? It was just a dominant performance.
I agree. Lima's a really good fighter, but he just had no answers. If I'm Lima, I'm probably taking another fight and just working on my wrestling nonstop for the rest of 2021. But I am booking another fight and then taking a run at Amosov. Lima, I think, has won the title 3 times, and he's also won a Grand Prix. So he's pretty highly thought of over there. I think he can have a say, you know, and maybe what he thinks he thinks might work and might not work. Hang on, Goz. Let me answer Bilal Muhammad real fast. I'm having difficulties here.
Okay. But yeah, you know, Bellator, I think really what stood out from that card was Aaron Pico. And it's so difficult to evaluate that situation with Aaron Pico. He looked phenomenal. I mean, he just looked like a video game out there at some point in that fight. He was getting his takedowns. He was getting his strikes. That's never really been an issue of getting an Aaron Pico that you felt like didn't put time into a training camp or anything. You always get an honest Aaron Pico. It's just whether or not he can hold up in the fight, make mistakes. He looked fantastic. The question is, what do you do with him now? Where do you go from now? I mean, it's so difficult with that guy.
That Aiden Lee would not go away, man. He kind of was a little bit of a Tyler Diamond himself. He wasn't unconscious like Tyler Diamond was or appeared to be at times, but he would not go away because Pico kept taking him down and beating him up. But if I'm Bellator, I'm shaking that guy's hand and saying, hey, great performance, wasn't your night, but I can't wait to book you again. It made me remember him, that's for sure. And shout out to Jason Jackson, who defeated Paul Daly. He had to resort to some wrestling to get that fight done. You know, when they book Paul Daly, I'm always thinking Semtex, explosion, knockout. And it's hit or miss with that guy. Sometimes you get it, but sometimes you also get someone that wants no part of that, and they have to grind their way to a win. But it seems like they're pally, so, you know, no hard feelings. Daly didn't say it was his last one, much like Maya, you know, same thing. So it looks like we may still see them compete in the future. Speaking of Damian Maya, we have his opponent from Saturday night, Bilal Muhammad, defeated Damian Maya at UFC 263. We're going to set him up, and we'll be right back with Bilal Muhammad here on MMA Junkie Radio. There he is, the winner of the Damian Maya Bilal Muhammad fight this past Saturday night. Takes him to 19-3. What's up, Bilal? How are you?
What's up, boys? How you guys doing?
Good. How about you?
Good. Feeling all right.
Congrats on your win this past Saturday. Before we get into the fight, the result and all that, I did want to ask you, on early in the fight when Damian was trying to get a takedown, did you bend your right knee awkwardly, or maybe your right ankle? Did it bend back, and did it affect you at all?
No, I have very weird dexterity in my legs. Like, I'm one of those guys that when I sit down, watch the TV, like, my legs, like, folded in a weird way. My brother's always, like, making fun of me. But yeah, no, I had like a weird flexibility with them, so nothing really bad happened with them. It was all right.
Okay, all right. Just wondering. I had a horrible knee injury, and so now I sometimes wince when I see a leg bend backwards or this way or sideways, because I'm keeping an eye on that. And by the way, you had a nice quad game, because I have to work back my quads because of the injury, so I pay more attention to that. But holy cow, man, is that just genetics, or do you squat, or you don't skip leg day? That's for sure.
I do a lot of stairs. I do a lot of stairs running. It's funny you say that, because I was in the back warming up, and then Ali came in the back, and Ali came out like, "Oh wow, your legs are big," and I'm like, "I'm like, yeah, that, you never saw me first." Like, oh, I never noticed them. I'm like, "Yeah, that's where all the weight comes in."
There you go. All right. Well, you fought a legend, man. Damian Maia has been in the sport for a long time. He fought for a title in the middleweight division, in the welterweight division. You know how many wins he's got in the UFC. You know, this may have been his last fight. Sounds like he might have one more in it. What was the experience like fighting someone like Damian Maia?
Honestly, it was amazing. Like you said, he's a legend. He's that guy that everybody always like looked up to. And then the only guys that literally beat him were either champions or fought for the title. So it's like, to have that guy on my resume is amazing. And it was one of those guys where I always wanted to know how I would do against him, because I literally, like, all the fighters I've really gone against in the UFC, they all been strikers. And I was like, man, I could grapple with these guys. I want to grapple. I want to fight a grappler. But, and I would always call for Maia. I'd always ask for Maia, and it would never come through. And then they called me with this fight, and they were like, you want to fight Maia in June? And I was like, I had a trip booked to Africa. I was going to go to Africa. Me and Lewis Taylor, we're going to go down there on like a charity, with a charity foundation. Where like they're doing cataract surgery to people that couldn't see, and putting in hearing aids to people that couldn't hear. And it was like during, it was like right in the middle of this camp, and I was like, oh man, I already got a trip booked to Africa. Could we go in July? And they're like, oh no, it's only June. You want to do June? And I was like, ah, all right. So then, you know, we're going to reschedule that. And then I was like, all right, I have to take this Maia fight. So I don't know. Like you said, this could be his last fight. I don't know if I'll ever get the opportunity again. So then they gave it to me, and I was like, it was one of those things where, like, you're getting people telling you, oh, talk trash to him or do this. I was like, dude, this is Damian Maia. Like, I'm not going to sit there and fake it. Like, I'm honored to fight a guy like that. So it was just amazing just to be in the cage with him. And, like, it was all respect.
I can't think of anybody that would disagree with that. That's Damian Maia. You go out there and you compete, and that's that. You know what I mean? May the best man win. It was you. He got a couple takedowns, you know, and I wanted to ask you specifically, though. You know, great work on getting back up, great work on defending his attack, great work on stopping some of them from being takedowns. But there was one in the first round, and I got to imagine that's the biggest nightmare for anyone that's fighting Damian Maia, is getting taken down in the first round and looking up and there's still time left on the clock. You know, that's when you have to exert your patience, your discipline, your composure, and go through your thought process. How was that experience, and how much did you train, you know, to be in that experience and to make sure that you could control your breathing and just, you know, not let this anaconda get a hold of you?
Man, it was crazy. It was like one of those things too. During camp, it was getting like, I was getting a little bit frustrated and like stressed out, because I'm like, I'm having people tell me like, oh, you need to get yourself a great jits guy in there. You need to get a competitive jits guy. And so, you know, like I worked a day with JT Torres from New York, really good jits guy. And then I was trying to hit up Rafael Lovato to come down. I was going to pay him to come down and work out with them. And then, like, I tried to get JT to come back, and he said the schedule didn't work out, so he couldn't. Then Lovato said his schedule didn't work out, so he couldn't. So then I was getting stressed. I'm like, man, free all these guys, you know, when they fight Maia, they bring in, like, top guys. And I was like, man, forget this. And I was like, you know what? Like, forget that mindset. I was like, we need to change our mindset. My coach is like, dude, we're not going to go to the ground. We're not going to get taken down. Like, we have great wrestlers here that we'll just work on that. Like, we're not going to get Maia jiu-jitsu in 8 weeks. So let's get, we already have good enough wrestling to compete with them. So let's just sharpen up that tool and we'll do that. He won't get us to the ground. So then our whole camp was just like, all right, defending the takedown. And then literally when he got me down, it was like the first minute. It was one of those where I'm like, right when he got me down, I was like, fudge. But then I'm like, you know what? We work to get up. We know how to get up. Let's do it the right way, because that's what he waits. He waits for you to get a little frustrated or a panic, one little inch, and then you turn up, give your back, and he'll hold your back or hold you down for the whole round. He don't care about being born or anything like that. Like, he had Masvidal's back the whole round. He had even Gilbert Burns in the first round. He had his back the first round and mounted him. He had Usman in that wizard position. Like, so he had all these top guys in the worst positions. And, like, you're watching these tapes and you're like, man, what is he going to get me in? What is he going to get me in? And then once he got that takedown, I was like, let's get back up. Then once I got back up, I got my confidence back, and I was like, all right, it's not going to happen again. And luckily, he didn't get me taken down ever again in that fight.
And that's something that I kind of wanted to talk about was frustration, confidence. You kind of did to Damian Maia what he does to everybody else. He had this look when he couldn't get the takedown on you of just pure frustration. Were you able to catch that look? And do you feel like there was ever a moment in that fight where you felt like maybe you did break him?
Yeah. Probably in the second round, because, like, he literally just kept shooting. So it was like one of those things where you don't want to overextend. But then once a couple times when I just pulled my leg out, like, I saw it in his face. Like, it'll have it in his face. Like, fudge. So then I was like, yeah, that's what it is. Because for me, like, everybody always, like, trains with me. When they go for a single leg on me, it's, like, the hardest thing to get. They'll never get me down with it. And then I know right after they try, and then I'll sit there and, like, balance on my leg for, like, 2 minutes, knowing that once they let go, they're going to be dead tired. And then I'll take advantage of them and then, you know, start putting it on them. And I'm one of those guys that jokes around at PAX all the time. So I'll be laughing like, yeah, now you're tired. Now it's time for me to go. So, like, that was kind of like my mindset. And I was like, oh, now you're tired. Now it's time for me to go. But it was also one of those things, too, where, you still can't overcommit on anything with Maia, because literally all he needs you to do is make that one tiny mistake.
Bilal, you're a big social media guy. And so I think you're very familiar with the tone, the language of what people put out there in social media. People are looking at fights in different from different perspectives. There's the media. There's people that gamble on the fights. There's people that are just fans. There's nationalistic pride. When you're in the cage and you're fighting, it's so easy to see something where people go in there and finish him and do that. But there's also a lot of times where I sit back personally and think, if I were Bilal's brother or if I was his coach, what would I be saying, right? And I felt like a guy like Damian Maia, no matter how tired he is dangerous to that last second. What is kind of going through your mind once you feel like you've broken him? What is it that you're thinking? Are you trying to get out there with the win? Are you trying to impress the boss? Are you trying to get a bonus? What are some of the things that go through your mind there in the last part of that fight?
You know, usually in my fights, it's like, all right, once I get to the third round, I know these guys are dead tired. So I'm like, all right, put the pressure on and break these guys. But for this camp, it was like we wanted to be so calculated with our game plan. Like, yo, if it's working, that's it. If we have to jab them the whole fight, we're going to jab them the whole fight. We're not going to sit there and overexert it because, like you said, like all these guys, one mistake, and that's he'll get hurt and then he'll pull guard and then he'll get on top of you. Tap you out when you think he's broken. Even Ben Askren like took him down. You're like, all right, it's over. Then all of a sudden he flipped him over, mounted him, and you're like watching all this tape of him. You're like, once he gets to the ground, it doesn't matter how tired he is, that's his zone. That's where he's comfortable, and that's doesn't matter how tired he is. He's been doing it so much, so long, his whole life, that it just comes natural. So it's like, for me, it was just being patient, because you know, once it got to the third round, I was like, all right, now we were like, start throwing kicks now. Upper to the head and everything like that. So I was like, all right, so now he won't start catching it. And then I rocked him one time in the third round with the right hand. And then, like, you could see it in his face. It hurt him a little bit. But then I was like, it's not enough still. So, like, it was still to the point where I was like, usually I would go, I would bull rush the guy and let loose. But it's like, with Maia, you can't do that because that's what he waits for. Like, Chael Sonnen put out a video before the fight where he picked Maia, and he was like, Maia is literally the only guy that beat me that I wouldn't want that rematch back, because he was the toughest guy to fight. He was the guy that people think that he can't strike, but it's 4 ounce gloves, and he probably punched me the hardest that I've ever got punched. And he's that guy, no matter what age he is, he still has that grip strength and everything like that. So it was like watching that before the fight, and you're like, he's right. So it's just all about being smart, and that's what I had to do this fight.
Did you think it could be 1-1 going into round three, even though it could also be 2-0 you? But did you think that that was a small possibility, and therefore you had to be a little bit more guarded of how round three went?
Yeah, after he got that – I know he had that one takedown in the first, But like I like you said, you never know with judging how they're gonna to say it. But my coaches were like, they were confident that we were winning. But like for me in my head, I was just thinking about that takedown. And I was like, oh, he got that one takedown, so I got to do a little more volume in the third. And then in the third, I was like, I cannot let him take me down. Like a lot of his fights, he'll wait for that halfway point to 230, and then he'll start picking it up and trying to go for the takedown. So that in my head too, it was like the clock in my head, like, all right, now he's going to start. Now he's going to try. So it was like just being calculated while trying to be offensive as well.
I get it, man. Trust me. When Goz was talking about some guys are media, some guys are gamblers, some guys are fans, I was ticking all the boxes. That's me. You know what I mean? But I also have followed the sport and covered the sport long enough to know the strategies that are involved, because I thought there was a point in the third. I go, I think Bilal can go for the finish here. But if it's 1-1 and Damian can get some sort of a takedown and things don't go right, it's going to be one of those 29-28s that stings forever. You know what I mean? So I can only imagine that's probably what you were processing as the fight was unfolding. Maya's just when you're in there, you're playing chess against him. You know, everybody else is just king me, bitch, checkers and blah, blah. His is a little bit more cerebral, you know. His is a little bit more of a cerebral game, and he's an expert at it.
He's one of those guys where if he would have inked that out and then got me that takedown one, then it's like, well, Maya still got it at 43 years old. Bilal's not good enough to fight to compete with the top 10 guys. So that would have been the narrative. But now it's like, well, Maya should retire now. But for me, I already had that. I already knew what it was going to be going into this fight. Like, I already knew what the mindset was. But for me, it was like, I'm proud of what I did. I'd be a legend. I'd be Damian Maya. Nobody can take that away from me.
So what is next? Do you have plans to go back to the African, it's not a safari, you were going on a charity mission. Are you still going to go on that? And then after that, fight again in 2021? Like, how does the summer play out for you now?
Yeah, well, I mean, they ended up doing that trip. It looked amazing. It was very successful. So they're going to work on doing another trip. Just waiting to hear back from them. But I definitely want to fight again. I'm hoping either September or October. Definitely want a five-round fight. I feel like I earned a five-round fight. Like I said, the only guys that beat Maya have fought for the title or were champions. So for being a guy like that, I think I earned a five-round fight, especially after taking that Leon fight. And honestly, if you're really thinking about it, like I said, I look at stuff what makes sense. If you're thinking about what makes sense, if Kobe or Leon, one of them guys, gets the title fight, then I should be getting the other guy in a five-round fight. When you're looking at it, Gilbert Burns is fighting Wonder Boy. So both of those guys are out of there. So then who's Kobe and Whatchcar are not going to fight each other. Masvidal is going to look for a big money fight. So none of those guys are going to be fighting. So honestly, it makes the most sense for me to get one of those guys in a five-round fight.
I'd love to see it. Congrats on the win, Bilal. Thanks for squeezing us in here. I know you probably have a busy day before you head back home. But seriously, congrats on the win over Damian Maya. You got to fight a legend. I'm sure this career is all about experiences, you know, as well. And getting in there against him, that has to be pretty special, especially because you got your hand raised too.
Yep. Thank you, boys. Appreciate you guys.
All right. We'll see you, Bilal. Mm-hmm. All right, there he is, Bilal Muhammad, UFC welterweight, 19-3 overall, coming off a big win over Damian Maya. He's a tough out, goes. Damian's a tough out, and he's scary till the very end because sometimes he does look exhausted. In this fight, he looked leaner, and I still saw hands up. You know, he's never really had a lot of pop in his strikes, right? So sometimes you'll go, oh, he's not throwing as hard or whatever, but he's not that type of fighter. He's not like an explosive fighter. But yes, I'm glad he addressed it. He does have incredible grips, hand strength, grip strength. And he's very tactful. He's experienced. He knows when he can explode. Up until the very end, it had to be pretty scary, man, for Bilal. So maybe we give him a pass. But the only thing that it may hurt is just in terms of if he wanted to pass another fighter. Like, you know, Leon was dominant, but because that last fight, he barely got out of there by the skin of his teeth. perhaps Bilal would have done, you know, maybe ice Damian Maya. Maybe he gets to where Edwards is at or passes him. You know, I don't know. That's how the fights work out for the matchmakers and UFC president Dana White when they're making fights. You know, they'll go off of who's done what and what kind of a exclamation point or what kind of a statement they made in their previous fight.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it just might be that one fighter where you gotta play that game.
Poland just tied it up against Slovakia, 1-1 there. And just to finish out, we rushed through it real quick, but yeah, goes. I was very impressed with Aaron Pico on Friday night. It, you know, he might be in a position where when Frady and McKee Jr., when they fight, you know, it's going to be for the winner of the Grand Prix, the $1 million, but every single time the champion is fighting, he's also defending the belt. Pico might find himself in a position there where he may fight for a title. Now, I want to point out something that I did on our watch-along on Saturday. That's that McKee was very clear that he doesn't want to fight Pico. They used to be teammates. Apparently, they're pretty tight. So I would think it'd be an easier pass for him if Frady won, which I don't know if he would root against his friend, but if Frady won, if he wanted to get a title shot, or maybe he's just not worried about it. But now he's 7-3 or 8-3, and like I say, he's a few years removed from those KOs that he took back-to-back. So we'll see, but he's starting to deliver a little bit on what we thought he would, man. He's just got beautiful takedowns, great ground and pound, nice hands. Pico's legit, man.
Yeah, he was a beast, dude. He really was. It just, you could tell a lot of it was just mental, and he's one of the smartest guys out there. He did everything he needed to do to get back into a good place, and I think he's in a really good spot right now.
We're going to have to hurry here because we're already over on time. But Paul Craig just shredded Jamahal Hill's arm. And it looked nasty. You know, it looked like one of the nastier visual fights in terms of, like, there's obviously the leg breaks and the KOs that where someone's just completely iced. But I hadn't really seen somebody's arm flop like that with Jamahal Hill. He says there's no breaks, but there still could be, you know, torn ligaments or whatever. But as far as broken bones – or maybe dislocations, he may have dodged that bullet. But how about that Paul Craig, man? He's nasty when he ties up your arms.
Cool. He just had that stoic face. That it was a nasty injury. I mean, luckily, Jamal's a young guy, and there were no breaks. So hopefully the whatever happened to the ligaments wasn't too bad. But he said all the right things, you know, and he gave Paul Craig his respect. And he's just going to move forward. He said it was just his night to lose. And Jamahal Hill will be back. He's definitely a tough competitor. He's so young. He's still getting better.
The prelims main event had Brad Riddell against Drew Dober. Some lightweights that threw down. Everything they threw was with bad intentions. They got 50K each. So big night for Brad Riddell. And it kind of set the tone for City Kickboxing. They panned over to Israel Adesanya. You could tell he was fired up for his teammate.
Man, that's a family over there. You could totally tell. Anytime one of their brothers is fighting, they're really into it. It was a great fight. I mean, they were hitting each other with some mean shots, big shots that whole fight. And I was surprised it went as long as it did.
If you're wondering, the other two bonuses went to Paul Craig and Brandon Moreno. It's hard to argue against those. Eric Anders and Movsvar Evloev got decision wins. But I want to talk about Lauren Murphy, who was also on the ESPN portion of the prelims. She may have secured herself a title fight. She got a split decision win over Joanne Calderwood. It was really a fun fight to watch.
Yeah, it was a good one. It was a tough fight. Joanne Calderwood had her moments. It was a very close fight. But I think at the end, the right person had their arm raised.
Pani Khanizad, Steven Peterson, Fares Yam, and Carlos Felipe got decision wins on the early prelims. I just want to talk about one fight, Terrence McKinney. It took all of 7 seconds to get past Steamrolla. Even Jorge Masvidal said, ooh, close, I think he tweeted or something like that. He, of course, holds the record for the fastest KO at 5 seconds, but this kid got done in 7, and then he kind of tweaked his knee, although it sounds like he's going to be all right.
Yeah, I mean, that one, I know it's part of a celebration, but I don't know that I could really come down on the guy because it's not like he backflipped or anything like that. He did something that I think a lot of people would do, just, you know, jump up in the air, kind of just stomped his knee a little bit, and he hurt it. But, I mean, come on. 7-second knockout. Who's not going to celebrate that?
17,208 were in attendance. The gate was 4.2 million in Glendale, Arizona. And that wraps up UFC 263, Bellator 260, PFL 2021, week four. PFL has a fight card coming up. Week five, that'll feature, I think they're going to have light heavyweights and welterweights. And then we also have Ige versus the Korean Zombie. But we'll talk a little bit more about those upcoming cards on Thursday. Want to thank Bilal Muhammad and Brendan Lockheim for their time. I want to thank all of you for joining us on Saturday for our UFC 263 watch along. We had a blast. Hopefully you enjoyed the experience, especially now with the BetMGM presence. Hopefully some of you made some money. But we had, you know, a fun time with the chat, the different tweets that could be seen as well. Those little tabs that were created by the Panda team, I think definitely improved the experience. So not only could you see what all of us were thinking, what Goza and I were saying, but what people were out there were thinking, you know, across social media. And I think it's just going to get better and better. So thank you again to the BetMGM people, USA Today Sports, the Panda team as well, formerly the Sportscaster. And more importantly, you for hanging out with us during this watch-along. We obviously hope to be back for UFC 264, Poirier versus McGregor Part 3. But more on that in the weeks to come. I want to thank you all for joining us here on Monday. Have yourselves a nice day and keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week as we cover the sport of mixed martial arts like nobody else can. Go out there and be a champion.